Welcome to the Divergent Files podcast. Before the flood, before kings, before even history had a name, something came down from the sky. They weren't angels, they weren't myths, they were engineers. And what they built still walks the earth. This is the story the tablets tried to tell, and the one the modern world keeps trying to forget. The oldest stories on earth say the gods didn't just watch humanity, they built us. The Sumerians called them the Anunnaki, sky beings who came down and fashioned mankind from clay. Most people call it myth. But what if the evidence was never myth at all, just buried in skulls that don't fit human evolution? By the end of this video, you'll see why some scientists and a whole lot of governments don't want you asking that question. Because maybe the question isn't if the gods made us, it's why they stopped. Peru, 1928. A team of archaeologists stumbles into a forgotten burial site near Paracas. At first, they think it's a normal dig. Pottery shards, bones, sandstone. But then they unearth a skull and freeze. It's massive, elongated. Not flattened like other tribal skulls, not deformed. The cranial volume is too big. The bone structure is wrong. And when they test the mitochondrial and DNA, it doesn't match any known native lineage. Instead, it points to somewhere else, thousands of miles away, thousands of years before contact was supposed to be possible. And the weird part? That same DNA signature shows up again in royal tombs in ancient Sumer, the birthplace of the Anunnaki myth. In this episode, we'll trace the trail of forbidden genetics, ancient bloodlines, suppressed excavations, and skulls museums don't want to talk about. Because if the story of humanity was altered, who did it? And what were they trying to leave behind? This isn't ancient history. It's evidence, still hidden in plain sight. Because if the story of humanity was altered, who built us and why did they stop? There's something weird about us, and I don't mean politics or TikTok. I mean us as a species. We don't fit the pattern, and maybe that's because we weren't part of it. We're the only animals that cook food, build rocket ships, and argue on the internet about whether birds are real. But according to evolution, this kind of intelligence is supposed to take millions of years to slowly develop. Humans? One day, we're gnawing bones and hiding from thunderstorms. Next thing you know, we're splitting atoms and arguing online about flat Earth. That's not evolution. That's a cheat code. And scientists might have just found it. In 2020, researchers at the Max Planck Institute found a strange mutation in a gene called TKTL1. A single amino acid swapped out, one microscopic edit. And that's it. But that tiny change, it supercharged how fast we grow neurons, especially in the frontal lobe, where planning, logic, and abstract thought live. Translation? Someone hit turbo mode in our brains. And almost overnight, humans started building cities, calendars, languages, and gods. But the oldest records ever written, the ones from ancient Sumer, Egypt, and India, they tell a different story. They said we don't evolve by chance. We were engineered, created by sky beings called the Anunnaki, who came down, fashioned mankind from clay, and made us to serve. And when those beings realized we'd gotten too clever, they tried to erase us. A flood, a reset. And that's not fan fiction. It's carved into tablets. The Atrahasis epic, the Eridu Genesis, long before Genesis ever hit print. Now fast forward to 1928, the royal tombs of Ur, ancient Sumer. Archaeologists uncover Queen Puabi, rich beyond reason, adorned in gold. In her skull, it's elongated, symmetrical, but not bound, not modified, not human normal. For decades, scientists have requested DNA testing. For decades, the museum's answer has been the same: denied. No explanation, just silence. So we have a gene that shouldn't exist, a myth that reads like memory, and a skull that science won't touch. Maybe evolution just glitched, or maybe someone rewrote the code. Either way, the story of where we came from isn't finished. It's still buried in our bones. So maybe evolution didn't glitch. Maybe someone upgraded us, then walked away. Which brings us back to the beginning. Who built us, and why did they stop? Imagine digging through ancient mud and finding your own maker's notes. That's what Sumer is, a time capsule from the first version of us. Not Egypt, not Stonehenge. Further back. We're talking 5,000 to 6,000 years ago, in the cradle of everything, southern Mesopotamia, modern-day Iraq. The place that gave us writing, kings, beer, and maybe our origin story. They called it cuneiform, little wedge marks in clay that look like a chicken panicked on a keyboard. But don't let that scribbles fool you. These tablets didn't tell fairy tales. They wrote about rulers, wars, star maps, floods, and gods that didn't float in the sky. They walked the dirt. The most famous texts? The Enuma Elish, the Atrahasis epic, and the Eridu Genesis. They weren't labeled myths. They were accounts, records. And if you believe the scribes, this wasn't creative writing. This was memory. Let's talk names. Not Zeus, not Thor. The big ones were Anu, the top boss, Sky Domain, and Lil, the enforcer, flood starter. Not a fan of us. Enki, scientist god, liked humans, allegedly made us. Ninhursag, mother goddess, midwife of life, possibly biotech specialist, before biotech was a word. The way the Sumerians tell it, the gods weren't ethereal spirits. They had cities, councils, family drama, and eventually a labor shortage. So they got creative, took the clay of the earth, mixed it with divine blood, and built a worker. The tablets don't say they taught monkeys to walk upright. They say they engineered people. The job? Mostly digging, especially for gold. Because even gods apparently had budgets. But the humans multiplied. They got louder, smarter, stopped taking orders. And someone decided it was time for a global system reset. So they flooded the planet. That's in multiple Sumerian records. Also shows up in Genesis, India's Mahabharata, Mayan codices, take your pick. Now enter Zechariah Sitchin. He's the guy who made the Anunnaki famous in the 1970s, claimed they were space miners from Nibiru who genetically modified humans. He said Anunnaki meant those who from heaven came. But here's the thing, it doesn't mean that. Real Sumerologists say it's more like royal bloodline of Anu, still divine, but not exactly aliens on a layover. Sitchin got a lot of stuff wrong. He misread the language, freestyled the cosmology, and handed skeptics a loaded shotgun. But even if he botched the translation, he was looking at the right clay. Because those records, they're still in museums. And one of the strangest? The Sumerian King List. It's a literal stone document listing Earth's rulers before and after the flood. The opening line? After kingship descended from heaven, it was in Eridu. Not invented, descended. Then it lists rulers who reigned for 28,800 years. 36,000. One guy ruled for 43,200. Try fitting that in a democracy. Academics call it symbolic, some kind of sacred math. But what if they were just telling the truth? Because now we know, around 70,000 years ago, humans hit a genetic bottleneck, nearly wiped out. It happened again around 12,000 years ago, right around the supposed flood timeline. And today, we're digging up lost cities beneath the oceans, finding monoliths older than the pyramids, structures built by people who weren't supposed to exist yet. So maybe the gods didn't just inspire our stories. Maybe they left behind a record. And maybe what we call myth was just the first version of history. Because these tablets, they didn't say the gods created us and then just left. They said they stayed, had families, bled into the bloodline. So the next question isn't, did the Anunnaki exist? It's, are their descendants still walking around today? Because according to them, the gods didn't just create us. They stayed. They lived, ruled. So if they walked among us once, maybe they never really left. Maybe they just changed uniforms. If you were a god watching your experiment spin out of control, how would you start over? The ancient answer was simple. You flooded. Reset the board. So picture this. You're standing on a beach, any beach. The tide pulls back, birds go silent, and the horizon starts rising. That's not drama. That's the memory carved into over 100 different cultures across the planet. They all say it differently, but the plot's the same. The world ended in water. Sumer, Egypt, India, the Hopi, Aboriginals, even Arctic tribes who've never seen a thunderstorm, let alone a tsunami. Same story, too many people, too much noise. The gods hit reset. Now, skeptics say, oh, those are just metaphors. Okay, sure. But here's the problem. The metaphors match the geological record, down to the year. Let's go to the tape. About 70,000 years ago, a volcano in Indonesia, Toba, decided it was done being a mountain. It blew sky high, and the ash clouds smothered the skies. Global temperatures dropped, photosynthesis flatlined, and humans? Down to a few thousand breeding pairs. You don't recover from that easily. That's called a genetic bottleneck. Translation? Our species nearly didn't make it. But we did. And then, 60,000 years later, another curveball. Around 12,800 years ago, the climate throws a tantrum. The ice age ends fast. Glaciers melt, oceans swell, giant animals vanish. It's called the Younger Dryas, and right after it, something shows up that shouldn't. Megalithic cities. I'm not talking about tents or tool sheds. I'm talking Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, built with astronomical precision before the invention of pottery. Gunung Padang in Indonesia, layers going back over 20,000 years. Yonaguni Monument, Japan's underwater staircase to nowhere. No blueprints, no records, no scaffolding, just finished product. So let's stop pretending this was some caveman Pinterest phase. Because the timing is too neat. Mass extinction, climate reset, boom, civilization. That's not evolution, that's a restart. In the Sumerians, they already told us that. They split time into before the flood and after, literally. Before, the kings ruled for 43,000 years. After, suddenly everyone's dying at 30. It's not just mythology, it's a hard line in the stone record. And if you go back to the Atrahasis epic, it's clear what triggered it. The gods got annoyed. Too many humans, too much rebellion, too much thinking for ourselves. So they sent water. All of it. Except they warned one guy. Sound familiar? The Sumerians called him Ut-Napishtim. He built a boat, took animals, survived, rebooted the species. This was long before Noah ever picked up a hammer. So here's the part that lingers. What if this wasn't a bedtime story? What if the flood was real? Not just water, but an intentional reset. Because DNA says something tried to wipe us out. Myths say someone did. And modern archaeology keeps unearthing cities with no origin story, just footprints in stone. So maybe we didn't survive by luck. Maybe we were selected. Maybe the version of humanity we are now was the one they let through. The flood wasn't the end of the story. It was page one of the new draft. And if that's true, then someone out there didn't just erase the past, they rewrote it. So maybe we weren't the lucky survivors. Maybe we were the ones they let through, the second draft. And if that's true, who hit reset? And who's been editing the code ever since? You can hide a lot in mythology, but DNA doesn't lie. It remembers who edited it. A single cell holds about 3.2 billion letters of genetic code. You mess with one letter, just one, and the species changes. That's not a theory, that's documented. In 2020, researchers at the Max Planck Institute found a gene in our frontal lobe called TKTL1. Rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it? One amino acid in that gene separates us from Neanderthals. Just one. But that one tweak seems to flip a switch. Suddenly, our brains pump out neurons faster, more wiring, more problem solving, more building pyramids while everyone else is still figuring out how not to freeze to death. So the obvious question is, who or what flipped that switch? Because evolution's supposed to take its time. It doesn't throw turbochargers on random branches of the family tree. But that's what happened. Somehow, out of the entire hominid lineup, us, we got the upgrade. Now, stack that against what the ancient Sumerians were writing 5,000 years ago. They didn't say humans just showed up. They said we were mixed, a cocktail of earth and divine essence, clay and blood. Not myth, not metaphor, a lab recipe, disguised as a creation myth. So think about it. Clay could be native DNA, whatever upright apes were already here. Blood, that's code for, well, code, genetic input from somewhere else. So we're not saying it's aliens. We're saying it sounds a lot like bioengineering, using the only language they had to describe it. And there's a reason they did it. Because according to every tablet, temple carving, and oral legend, the gods weren't here for enlightenment. They came for gold, raw, unrefined, from the belly of the earth. Not wealth, not bling, utility. Gold doesn't corrode. It reflects radiation. It's used in spacecraft, satellites, visors, quantum computers, cancer treatment, and high-efficiency electronics. NASA literally lines spacecraft with it. And gold aerosols? Some scientists today are exploring them for geoengineering to stabilize the atmosphere. So if you're a species trying to survive a broken environment, gold isn't jewelry. It's life support. Now look around. Earth has gold. It has water. It's got mineral-rich terrain and a pretty manageable gravity. It's essentially a perfect staging ground. Except for one problem. There's no labor force. So what do? Well, you make one. Smarter than an ape, strong enough to dig, just aware enough to obey. And if your first model's too stubborn or inefficient, you iterate. You refine the design until you've got something that looks like us. And if that sounds crazy, remember, we do that now with animals, with crops, with data models. We optimize. So what if the thing we've been optimizing for thousands of years was actually us? As in the ancient records, the first man wasn't called Adam. He was Adamu, a prototype, born into a world he didn't understand, wired for tasks he didn't choose, staring up at stars that didn't recognize him. And maybe in that first moment of waking, he knew. This wasn't evolution. This was ownership. Because if we were built to serve a purpose, that purpose didn't end when the mines ran dry. It evolved. And maybe that evolution was never ours to control. Every creation story has a missing motive. Why did the gods even bother? Well, it turns out they might have been desperate. We've talked about the floods, about sudden intelligence, about ancient stories carved in stone. But all of that leads to one bigger, colder question. Why were we made at all? Because if we weren't just an accident of evolution, if we were built, then who needed us and for what? The Sumerians didn't leave it vague. They told us straight up. The gods, the Anunnaki, didn't come here to explore or to teach. They came because they were losing everything. Their world, Nibiru, was breaking down, its atmosphere failing, radiation levels spiking, not myth, not metaphor, an extinction level clock ticking. In Earth, it wasn't a vacation spot, it was a last chance. According to the ancient tablets, their world, Nibiru, was on life support, not symbolically, literally. Atmosphere thinning, radiation creeping in. Every orbit through deep space made it worse. So they started looking for a fix, not war, not slaves, gold. Because gold does something almost nothing else can do. It reflects radiation. It's stable in extreme environments. And when it's ground into fine particles and suspended in the air, it forms a shield. Today, we call that geoengineering, using aerosols to manipulate climate. They just called it staying alive. So they scan the system. They find Earth, loaded with gold, water, breathable air. They didn't see paradise. They saw a quarry. And every quarry needs labor. The surface gold was easy, but it ran out fast. The good stuff was buried deep, hard to reach, dangerous, and their own workers burned out. Rebellious, too few to keep up with demand. So they made a call, not to build robots, to build us. Modified from local stock, given just enough brain power to follow instructions, strong enough to work, simple enough not to question it. A workforce that didn't need rights or rest or a retirement plan, just pickaxes and pressure. We weren't the chosen ones. We were the stopgap, an emergency workaround. Bred not from wonder, but from necessity. A living patch to plug a dying world. And the scariest part? If that's how we started, then what happens when the emergency ends? Because tools don't get thanked. They get stored or scrapped. So maybe the Anunnaki didn't make us for worship. Maybe they made us to survive. Their survival, not ours. And when a species plays God once, it never really stops. You ever look around and think we're not built right? Well, turns out we might not be. Because the human body feels less like nature's masterpiece and more like a patch job. Because biologically, we don't really belong here. We're a mess. Let's start with some of the basics. We burn in the sun like we're solar allergic. We throw our backs just from tying our shoes. Our babies are so fragile, they'd barely survive without modern medicine. And that's not elite design. That's janky hardware. And it's what led Dr. Ellis Silver, an environmental scientist, not some fringe alien blogger, to ask a brutal question. What if we didn't evolve here? What if we were dropped in? Silver laid out the receipts in his book called Humans Are Not From Earth. He pointed out things like our circadian rhythm doesn't line up perfectly with a 24-hour day. We need weirdly specific diets and supplements just to stay functional. We develop allergies to everything. Our skin fries in the sun, and our posture is trash. Now, sure, some of that can be chalked up to modern life, but some of it can't. Let's talk DNA. Humans have 46 chromosomes. Our nearest cousins, chimps, bonobos, gorillas, they all have 48. So what happened to our missing pair? Somewhere along the line, two chromosomes fused, specifically chromosome 2. And here's the part that makes geneticists sweat. That fusion point, it's clean, too clean. Doesn't look like a mutation. It looks intentional. One geneticist straight up called it a textbook example of intelligent manipulation. And right around that same window in prehistory, our brains got bigger, our tools got better, our language got complex. It's like someone hit the upgrade button. But the real head scratcher is that nearly 98% of our genome doesn't do anything. No protein coding, no trait expression, just static. They called it junk DNA. Now they call it dark DNA. Some are starting to call it a storage system. Russian geneticist Dr. Peter Gariev ran tests showing this so-called junk responds to light, sound, and frequency. He claimed you could literally program genetic material like software using vibration, sound, or resonance. And that starts sounding awfully familiar. Because across ancient cultures, the creation of life wasn't done with test tubes. It was done with voice. The gods spoke us into being. Sumerian texts say life was made by command. In Genesis, it's the word. Egypt, Thoth writes reality into existence. In India, Brahma sings the world alive. Not metaphors, descriptions. And we're just scratching the surface here. Because buried in your gut is another mystery, the microbiome. More neurons live in your gut than in some animals' brains. Over 90% of your serotonin, your feel-good chemical, gets made there. And that ecosystem is inside you. And that ecosystem inside you, it's not fully human. It has its own rules, its own memory, its own influence on how you think, feel, and act. So if someone knew how to rewire that, they wouldn't just shape your body. They could shape your behavior. So let's line this up. We've got a suspicious chromosome fusion that kickstarted higher function. Genetic junk that may not be junk at all. A biome inside your belly that controls your mood. And origin stories that all say the same thing. We were created, tuned, modified. Not to thrive, not to lead, but to follow. Maybe we weren't broken. Maybe we were built just right for someone else's purpose. Because when you engineer something for obedience, you don't make it flawless. You make it controllable. And if someone still holds the blueprint, then we're not the top of the food chain at all. We're the product. You think the gods agreed on what to do with us? Well, that's not even close. Because the oldest tablets we've got, Sumerian records from over 4,000 years ago, they hint at a quiet civil war. Two brothers, two agendas. One species caught in the middle. Enlil was the god of wind, storms, and zero chill. The HOA president of the divine realm. He hated noise, hated rebellion, and he hated us. He saw humans as a mistake that needed correcting, preferably with fire or flood. Then there's Enki, god of water, wisdom, and maybe the original blueprint guy for humanity. He actually liked us, gave us tools, knowledge, a shot. He's the one who slips you the test answers, then shrugs and says, "Don't get caught." But even Enki had doubts, because the humans he helped create got smart, got loud, got annoying. And that's when Enlil snapped. He didn't want reform. He wanted silence, permanent silence. He pushed for a full reset, not a punishment, a purge. Enki pushed back, not with swords, but with a whisper. He warned one man, gave him specs, materials, a floating bunker disguised as a myth. And that flood wasn't just rain, it was war. This sibling split between mercy and control echoes everywhere. In the Gnostic Gospels, there's Demiurge, a jealous gatekeeping creator who traps souls in matter. In Christian lore, there's Lucifer, not always the villain, but sometimes the light bringer. The rebel, the one who says, hey, maybe knowledge isn't a crime. In the Book of Enoch, there are the Watchers, sky beings who teach humans forbidden stuff like metallurgy and makeup. They get punished, not for what they did, but for what it meant. Because teaching a slave how to read, that's rebellion. And it wasn't the first one. The Sumerians wrote about the Ijiji, a race of sky workers who toiled for the gods, got sick of it, and walked off the job. Mass resignation. So what did the gods do? They made us, humans. We weren't version one. We were the replacement model. Not born, but deployed. Designed not just to serve, but to never question why. And the so-called fall of man? Maybe it wasn't because Eve snacked on bad fruit. Maybe it was because someone handed us the instruction manual and said, you're more than this. So the gods disagreed. One wanted obedience. The other gave us free will. And now we're stuck in the middle between storm and sanctuary, between silence and defiance. And maybe we always were. Because history doesn't start in Eden. It starts with water. It started as mist, rising off the canals, curling around the fields like breath. But deep in your bones, you knew. This wasn't just weather. The sky didn't blink. The thunder didn't stop. The rains came down and they didn't leave. They swallowed hills, temples, families. You saw priests climb ziggurats, praying to be spared. And you saw the sea take them away, anyway. So you tied your child to the rafters. You packed the jars with grain. You screamed at the heavens until your voice broke. But no one was listening, except him. The one who still cared, Enki. He came not in lightning, but in the pause between strikes. He gave you instructions, a shape, a vessel. You built, you floated. You watched the world end, not in fire, but in silence. And in that silence, you remembered. Every scream, every betrayal, every life lost because of a disagreement in the sky. You weren't saved because of divine mercy. You were saved because one God refused to follow orders. Because he looked down and still saw something worth saving. There's a queen in a museum right now with a skull that doesn't match the rest of human history. Her name is Queen Puabi. She didn't look like the others. Queen Puabi buried under layers of gold and lapis in a royal tomb in ancient Ur had a skull that didn't match the rest of the human story. Perfect teeth, jewelry, a body treated like royalty, but her head? It was too long, too clean, too symmetrical. And it wasn't head binding. That's real, but you can spot it from a mile away. Warped skulls, pressure marks, cultural intent. Puabi's head was different, biological, not shaped, but born. And here's the kicker. Her remains are sitting in the British Museum right now. Still no DNA test. And not because it's impossible, but because someone keeps saying no, quietly, consistently, with no reason given. But wait, it gets stranger. Across the world in Paracas, Peru, archaeologists uncovered dozens of similar skulls in ancient burial grounds. Elongated, yes, but also structurally different. Wider eye sockets, thicker bone, higher cranial volume. And when one finally got tested, the mitochondrial DNA passed through the mother, traced to haplogroup U2E. Not South American, not native, Middle Eastern. So hold up, what's Middle Eastern DNA doing in pre-Columbian Peru, thousands of years before ships were even in style? That's not cultural diffusion. That's a missing chapter. Some say they were migrants. Others say hybrids, human plus something else. Whatever lived in the sky myths, Anunnaki, Watchers, take your pick. And here's the uncomfortable part. These skulls aren't isolated. They pop up all over Iraq, Egypt, Malta, Peru. Always in elite tombs. Always in places where the ruling class kept secrets. So the obvious question is, why aren't they being tested? You've got skeletons that don't match any known lineage. You've got technology that can sequence a genome in a strip mall. And yet, total silence. Why? Until you start digging into the weird files. One report, heavily rumored and tied to a classified mission, describes U.S. Special Forces encountering a giant in the Kandahar Mountains. Red hair, massive frame, killed two soldiers before being brought down. Sounds like internet fiction, until FOIA requests got filed and the Pentagon's answer redacted. Then there's Lovelock Cave in Nevada. Miners in the early 1900s found bones, giant ones, skulls with double rows of teeth. Smithsonian came in, took the bones, never seen again. Every time these anomalies surface, they disappear. Every time there's a chance to settle it with science, someone slams the vault. So now ask yourself, why? So we're not saying giants are real. We're saying there's a pattern of vanishing evidence, and that should bother you. That should bother anyone. Because when royalty has a skull that doesn't match, and ancient elites share DNA across oceans, and the most powerful institutions keep saying, nothing to see here, maybe the hybrids never left. Maybe they're just harder to spot now. Not glowing in temples, just walking the halls of power. And the most dangerous idea of all, maybe we weren't just shaped by these beings. Maybe we were shaped for them. And if they're still here, then the story isn't ancient. It's ongoing. Before Genesis ever made it to parchment, there was clay. And the story written on it did not start in Eden. It started in Eridu. Because the oldest known civilization, Sumer, told a version of the garden story long before the Bible did. And it doesn't just rhyme with Genesis, it bleeds into it. Same rivers, same setup, same warning, different names. In the Hebrew text, man is made from dust. In the Sumerian tablets, Enki and Ninhursag mold a being called Adamu from clay. Not metaphorically, literally shaped, fused with divine essence, built, not birthed. They didn't call it sin, they called it design. Now, the location? Genesis says Eden was placed between four rivers, two of which are the Tigris and Euphrates. That's not heaven, that's Iraq. And in the Sumerian version, the gods live in a lush land right between those same rivers. It wasn't Eden, it was Eridu, the god Enki's home base. But let's go deeper. In Genesis, Eve eats from the tree of knowledge. She wakes up, becomes self-aware. God punishes her, says, you'll suffer now. But in the older version, Enki gives humanity the tools, law, math, language, medicine. It's called the Mi, the codes of civilization. And he doesn't do it by accident. He does it on purpose, knowing he's breaking protocol. And just like Eve, he gets punished. Not by a snake, but by another god, Enlil. God of storms, authority, enforcement. He didn't want humans advanced. He wanted them useful, quiet, productive, and disposable. When humans got noisy, he called for a flood. Not because of sin, but because of volume. So what did Enki do? He warned one of them, helped build a boat. You know the story. You just know the version where the names got changed. Now here's where it gets twisted. The Old Testament name for God is Yahweh. And Yahweh isn't a peaceful sky dad. He floods the world, destroys cities, demands obedience. He walks in thunder. He burns bush. He sounds a lot like Enlil. So, who's the serpent? Who's the rebel in the garden? Who hands over the forbidden knowledge? Could be Enki. could be the same figure who tried to save us. And if you read the book of Enoch, the one that didn't make the biblical cut, it gets even stranger. It talks about the Watchers, beings from above who come down, mate with human women, and teach them the things they're not supposed to know. Fire, tools, symbols, civilization. And for that, they're exiled. Just like the Anunnaki, just like Enki, just like Lucifer, in the versions where he isn't evil, but defiant. So maybe these aren't separate stories at all. Maybe they're drafts, redacted, renamed, each one bending the narrative a little further until we forgot who was helping and who was holding the leash. Because if the Bible rewrote the gods into one name, what else did it rewrite? And who decided which version became gospel? In 2003, America invades Iraq. The official reason? Weapons of mass destruction. The kind they never found. But here's what most people don't know. The bombs hadn't even stopped falling, and US forces were already rolling up the ancient ruins. Not oil fields, not palaces. Ruins. Ur, Eridu, Nippur, Babylon. The birthplaces of writing, math, astronomy, law. These aren't just archaeological sites, they're where history started. And suddenly, they're off limits. Military zones, no press, no archaeologists, no explanation. You've got Humvees parked next to ziggurats, satellite blackouts, locked crates getting hauled out by special teams. And no, this isn't conspiracy theory filler. This stuff has been documented, but quietly ignored. One name kept floating up through the fog, Gilgamesh, as in that Gilgamesh, the Sumerian king from the oldest written epic in the world, the guy who meets the survivor of the Great Flood, the guy who searches for immortality. 2 years before the invasion, a joint Iraqi-German team said they might have found this tomb, right there in the Euphrates Valley, a buried structure deep lined with stone, possibly undisturbed. Then the US showed up, and that site? Gone. It was shut down, never mentioned again. But that wasn't the only lockdown. After the dust settled, UNESCO, supposedly the global guardian of historical sites, started denying access. Independent researchers got boxed out. Permits got revoked. Digs got canceled. Try to get back in, your career dies in paperwork. Your reputation dies in silence. Meanwhile, back in London, the British Museum still won't allow a full DNA analysis on Queen Puabi. Not partial, full. Why not? They'll let you test a 1,000-year-old Viking skeleton, a bog body, even a caveman, but not her. No answer, just no. And that kind of silence? It's never neutral, because we've seen this move before. It's straight out of the Cold War playbook. Operation Paperclip. After World War II, the US quietly smuggled Nazi scientists into government programs. Guys who worked on missiles, gas, and God knows what else. We erased their past, gave them new names, stuck them into NASA, DARPA, and other agencies that don't like questions. Why? Well, because useful truth is sometimes treated like a threat. And now it looks like ancient history is getting that same treatment. Sealed sites, unopened genomes, global institutions pretending there's nothing to see. But you can feel it, the pressure, the pattern. When every ancient culture talks about beings from the sky, about floods that reset the world, about knowledge being given instead of evolved, and then those exact sites get militarized? You're not guarding pottery, you're hiding receipts. You can measure how dangerous a secret is by how hard they work to erase it. And if it's not the ruins they're afraid of, maybe it's what's coming back. You You can bury a tomb, not an orbit. Because while we're down here arguing over tablets, something massive might be circling back. Picture this. You're a NASA scientist in 2015, staring at math that shouldn't exist. Something's tugging on objects way out past Neptune. Something big, too far to see, but heavy enough to leave fingerprints. They call it Planet 9, not Pluto, not a rogue asteroid. This thing could be 5, maybe 10 times the size of Earth. And it doesn't orbit like the rest. It swings wide, deep into the dark, then back again, on a path that might take 10,000, maybe even 20,000 years to complete. And when it swings close, it could trigger comets, tilt orbits, slightly ruin the neighborhood. But here's the part nobody can explain. Ancient cultures acted like they already knew. There's a Sumerian artifact called Cylinder Seal VA243. It shows a central sun surrounded by 12 orbiting bodies. The math doesn't work unless they somehow knew about planets we only confirmed recently. Uranus, Neptune, even something beyond. Then there's the Babylonian Mul Apin, over 3,000 years old, and it reads like a space agency schedule. Retrogrades, equinox shifts, precise star maps. These weren't cavemen with sticks. They were tracking time, like they were expecting something. And then comes the hot potato, Nibiru. Some call it a rogue planet. Others call it internet junk food. But let's be honest, most stuff online about Nibiru is either doomsday spam or recycled Y2K energy. But just because the memes are bad doesn't mean the idea is. What if Nibiru was never a planet? What if it's a cycle, a trigger, a recurring event that hits reset on everything we think is stable? Because that idea, it's global. The Maya had their long count calendar, entire epochs that end in fire or flood. The Hopi warned of the blue star Kachina, an object in the sky that signals the end of one world and the birth of another. Ancient India mapped out the Yugas, giant cycles of human rise, fall, and reset. And Egypt had Zeptepi, the first time, a golden age that ended fast. Different civilizations, scattered continents, same whisper. Something comes back. Maybe it's a planet. Maybe it's a timing mechanism. Or maybe it's the gods' favorite tool, the one that wipes the board clean. So what if Planet 9 isn't just some missing rock? What if it's the reboot key, the one the old stories kept warning about? And if it's on its way again, maybe it's not coming to destroy the world. Maybe we're about to meet our makers again. Okay, so before you grab your tinfoil or your Bible, let's clear the air, shall we? Because once you start tossing around Anunnaki, DNA hacks, and cosmic reset buttons, you've got to know where the line is between evidence and internet folklore. So let's clear the air. First, let's go over the confirmed stuff. Real science, real documents, real receipts. The TKTL1 gene mutation, that's peer-reviewed biology. In 2022, Max Planck's study showed one tiny tweak, just one amino acid, gave Homo sapiens a brain edge over Neanderthals. That's not a theory, that's published. Queen Puabi's skull? It's elongated, intact, still sitting in the British Museum. Multiple geneticists have requested access to run DNA tests. They've all been denied, with no explanation, no green light, no test. The Paracas skulls found in Peru? Not shaped by binding. When tested, mitochondrial DNA traced to haplogroup U2E. That's Middle Eastern, not South American. It's confirmed, published, but unexplained. The flood myths? Logged in over 100 ancient cultures, from Mesopotamia to the Pacific Islands. Same basic plot. World drowns, few survive, civilization restarts. It's not opinion, that's anthropology. Planet 9? NASA and Caltech have been tracking its math since 2015. It messes with orbits. It might be real. Still out there. Still undetected. But very much not dismissed. Now, for the stuff that's shaky or straight up mistranslated, Sitchin's Nibiru, as in rogue planet? No. The Sumerian word Nibiru actually means crossing or ferry, not a planet, not a spaceship. Most linguists agree he colored way outside the lines. That cylinder seal with the sun and 12 planets? Not an ancient NASA diagram. What Sitchin said were planets, modern scholars say they're stars or symbolic figures. So interpretation? Busted. Nephilim and Watchers equals aliens? Cool theory, but it's not proven. The Book of Enoch lays it out, but that book didn't even make the official biblical playlist. No DNA, no ruins, no hardware. But now, how about the unresolved? The stuff that won't sit down. Well, the skulls? They're too symmetrical, too large, not from binding. Are they mutated humans? Hybrids? Something else? We don't know. Still no answer. The Aiji? Sumerian texts mention a slave race before humans. No bones, no relics, just story. So maybe it's metaphor, but maybe they're still buried. The gods needing gold? That sounds like sci-fi, but gold does shield radiation. It's in satellites. It reflects solar flares. It never rusts. Wouldn't be the worst material for a species trying to patch an atmosphere. And that whole clay plus blood creation thing? Well, it could be poetic. Could also be exactly how a Bronze Age person would describe a bioengineered embryo. Ancient calendars tracking cosmic resets? Well, that's real. The Vedic Yugas, the Mayan Bactuns, the Hopi prophecies, the Egyptian Zeptepi, different languages but the same shape. So no, we're not saying aliens parked their mothership in Mesopotamia and dropped off a starter pack of humans. But the overlap is real. The weird skulls are real. The missing DNA tests, also real. And the mythologies, they're not random bedtime stories. They're warnings, etched in stone, echoed across oceans. So maybe the big question isn't, is it true? It's, why won't they even look? And why do the ones in charge work so hard to keep your eyes completely somewhere else? Maybe this story isn't ancient at all, because today we're doing it again. Editing DNA, merging man with machine, chasing immortality under a new name, innovation. The same obsession the gods had, upgrade life, no matter the cost. So it's easy to shrug off the old stories, the sky people, glowing ships, human DNA with an upgrade patch. Sounds like something a screenwriter pitched high at 3 a.m. But then you actually read what they wrote. You look at the ruins. You watch museum curators dodge DNA tests like they're allergic. And suddenly, it's not funny anymore. It's familiar. Because maybe we didn't evolve naturally. Maybe we were edited, tuned, trimmed, switched on, then left alone to figure it out. And maybe the real question isn't where we came from, but what we were made to do. Because if you were engineering a species, why design it to question everything? Why give it curiosity without peace? Firepower without foresight? Memory that fades but never forgets the flood? Unless we weren't plan A. We were a patch, the reboot, a low-risk, soft-spoken sequel to a version that wouldn't shut up. The ones that broke free. The ones that got loud. So the gods pulled the plug and started again. Only this time, they made us manageable. They scaled us down, shorter lifespans, shorter tempers. Still creative, but slower to rise. Still seekers, but easier to steer. And still, somehow, we remembered. We remembered the stars, the fire from the sky, the visitors with names we weren't allowed to say. We remembered the fall, even when they tried to bury it. So maybe we weren't built to worship, or dig, or obey. Maybe we were made to find the cracks in the story, to follow the trail of echoes, to decode the message they left behind. And maybe every weird idea you've ever had, every itch to ask one more question, that wasn't rebellion. It was the signal waking back up right on schedule. If you made it this far, respect. You're part of the few still asking the oldest question on earth: who built us and why did they stop? I'm Ralph, and this is Divergent Files. We're not here to give you answers. We're here to pull the thread. So, from one truth-obsessed human to another, thank you. Until next time, stay curious, keep questioning, because no matter what they tell you, the truth is still out there.